everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pulse. This week, we are going to be preparing us for Women's Equality Day. Women's Equality Day happens every year, and it commemorates the passage of the 19th Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, that granted women the right to vote. The amendment was first introduced in 1878, though Women's Equality Day didn't come around until 1971, when U.S. Congress designated August 26th as Women's Equality Day. And throughout the years, women have diligently fought for equal rights. Though enormous strides have been made, there's some areas where women are still incredibly disadvantaged, and we want to kind of break that down. The criminal justice system is one of the most flagrant offenses, if we're going to be frank, to women across the nation and in Oklahoma. So we want to start to break that down and chat about Women's Equality Day and how we personally are seeing this criminal legal system impact mothers and families here in Oklahoma. And to help us do that, as always, I am joined by my co-host, Michael Olson.
Hey, everybody.
And we are also super lucky this week to have Jenna Morey with us from Remerge. If you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and a little bit about what your group does.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jenna Morey, and I am the executive director of Remerge of Oklahoma County. And we are a nonprofit that provides pretrial diversion services to mothers in Oklahoma County. So we have a great partnership with our district attorney's office and with the Oklahoma County court system that enables women who have been charged with a felony and have been referred by the district attorney's office to enter our program. The women that we serve are facing an average of 7 years in prison. But rather than going to prison, they can, with the district attorney's referral, come into our program. And it takes about 2 years to get through our program. It's a very intensive program where they are getting wraparound services and holistic services and really working to transform their lives. And when they graduate, they are employed, they are housed safely, they are substance use free, they are reunited with their children, and what makes our program really special is that they're eligible to have their charges dropped. So they no longer have to have that felony charge on their background check every time they try to get an apartment or go get a new job. And so that's huge in terms of being able to really walk forward fully in their lives. So we are very privileged to do this work. The women that we serve could be any of us. They could be your sister or your neighbor or your friend or you. And we really believe that they are worthy of treatment. And we get to witness every day what can happen when you provide people with treatment and opportunities in the criminal justice system.
That's incredible. And we're really happy to be able to do that work alongside you guys. It truly takes everybody for meaningful reform and meaningful wraparound care in every state.
Absolutely. It takes a village to do this work for sure. We could not do what we do. We have over 40 partners in our community, as well as great working relationships with the public defender's office and the district attorney's office and the court. So Remerge is a special kind of animal. There are actually only a few of our kinds of programs in the country. And we like to think that we're setting the standard for what treatment for women can look like. But we don't do that alone. We do that with many, many partners in our community. So we are very, very fortunate to live in a community where people are willing to put in resources and cooperate and collaborate to make these futures possible for the mothers that we serve.
I think that the underlying importance as well is how important diversion is. These diversion programs, of course, they're important to the individuals who go through them, but they're really important for the community as well. I mean, I know of a study that found, I think back probably 10 years ago now, that found that if just 10% of people eligible for diversion programs were actually sent to community-based, in this study, it was substance abuse treatment programs rather than prison, then the justice system would save $4.8 billion. This is nationally, of course, when compared to current practices. And they went on to say that every dollar invested in drug treatment yields $12 worth of saving in terms of reducing future crime and healthcare expenses. And Mike, you might have more data on this, but we know that diversion is not just good for those people going through it, but it's good for public safety and the community and our tax dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. At Remerge, over the last 11 years alone, we've saved the state of Oklahoma $39 million by treating people through our diversion program rather than incarcerating them. You know, I think we've made a really important point, and that is about public safety. I think sometimes there is a misconception that we're giving people a break, an undeserved break, when they go through a diversion program rather than serving time in prison. But the truth is that most of these offenses, they're all nonviolent felony offenses that we serve. So the majority of them are drug-related offenses that have stemmed, you know, if we were to walk back about how that came about, it really stems from a lifetime of trauma and trying to treat that trauma through substances. And our community is not served, our public safety is not served by warehousing someone who needs treatment in prison. And then when they get out, nothing in their life has changed. They don't have a support system. They don't have job skills. They don't have coping skills. They haven't had great mental health treatment. And so really, all we did was kick the can down the road a little bit until we let them out again, but nothing in their life changed. And that's why it's important for public safety that for those people who are eligible for diversion, that we provide that opportunity, because the outcomes are so much better, not just in terms of treating that individual, but in terms of our community safety, in terms of labor force participation, economically, cost savings to the state, where children are not having to go to foster care and parents are working. So in so many areas, diversion works for our community. And certainly we see that at Remerge. So we serve the hardest cases that are out there. Most people, if you looked at our mothers on paper, would say that they are hopeless. We are the evidence that these women are not hopeless. They have only a 4% recidivism rate for our graduates. And so that is compared to the Department of Corrections for Oklahoma has a 20% recidivism rate. So when we compare those numbers, not only is it more economical for our state to send people who are eligible to diversion to diversion programs, but it is also has much better public safety outcomes in terms of if someone is going to reoffend and end up back in the criminal justice system.
Yeah, just to back up what was just said, I read a meta-analysis of every study that they could find about diversion and recidivism since the 1970s. And it's very clear from the scholarly literature that diversion reduces recidivism. And that's especially true, as was just stated, on individuals who are considered high risk of recidivism. So to give diversion to the people with the most extreme cases is actually the best use of resources, according to the scholarly literature.
Yeah, when Remerge was formed, we really were trying to figure out, you know, we would love to serve everyone, but, you know, there are limited dollars. We're a nonprofit, so you have to figure out where you can get the most bang for your buck. In terms of the resources that you are needing to input to make these changes. And so 11 years ago, when 25 community partners came together and said, how can we help solve for Oklahoma's just exceptionally high incarceration rate of women? The founders of Remerge felt like they could really make the biggest dent in that rate was to serve high-risk, high-need mothers. So our goal is, like you said, our communities get the biggest bang for their buck out of serving high-risk clients. But also, we felt like, given Oklahoma's statistics, their ACE scores for children, the number of grandparents, who we're one of the highest states in the country of people who have grandparents taking care of children. And so we really felt like serving mothers was the way to help start to break those intergenerational cycles of poverty, addiction, and incarceration. And that we could not only help that one woman, but we could help change the trajectory of her children's lives as well.
I think that pivots us really nicely into kind of the generational effects that these kind of issues can have. And when we're talking about investing in the community, you're also allowing us to invest in the future. We know that there are statistics that when a child has a parent that's involved in the system, they unfortunately themselves have a higher risk due to proximity of being a part of that system as well. And so investing back into these families is really investing in our future generations. And I'd love for us to break down a little bit of the intergenerational cycle of incarceration and how we're stopping that by propping these mothers up and allowing them to go back to just being mothers.
Yes, we think it is crucial to our community's well-being and to the future of Oklahoma that we serve mothers and that we help them. A lot of our moms, the average age that they left home was 15 years old. Most of them started substance use in their childhoods. They don't come to us until they're about 32 years old. And so the truth is that they've missed out on a lot of developmental years by repeated criminal justice involvement and substance use disorder. And by the time they get to us, there are lots of things that they just haven't learned. They haven't learned, and maybe no one ever modeled for them how to make a healthy meal, what healthy relationships look like, what healthy parenting looks like, what kinds of careers are available to them. No one maybe has ever said, I believe you can finish your GED and we're going to provide you with the resources to do it. And I believe in you. And so part of what we do at Remerge is really reparenting these mothers who missed out on their childhoods and all of their young adulthood. And those years are formative in terms of being a contributing member of our society. And so within the 2 years that they're with us, we really work on those skills. And by doing that, we help change how they interact with their children, how they engage, how they support their children, how they make sure their kids are healthy, how they talk to their teachers at their kids' schools. So all of those things are protective factors that we're helping moms build around their kiddos now that our moms probably missed out on. And we think it is vital that we teach those parenting and coping and healthy living skills, help them be free of addiction so that they can change the course of their family's life.
That one of the things you said reminds me of, so we have some ambassadors who are formerly incarcerated individuals who work with us and make sure that our policies are not just in a vacuum, you know, that they've lived it, they see it, they want us to use their expertise, and we do. And what you said reminded me of one of our women, and she was talking about how she did spend time in the incarceral system and how little they believed in her and how little hope she had a part of the system. And she got to go to a program, I unfortunately don't remember the name of it, while she was incarcerated. And she said that they taught her how to make a resume. They taught her how to go to job interviews, what questions they might ask, just like kind of running through that stuff. They taught her how to make a budget, how to even make a grocery list, because she'd never been tasked to do these things. And I think that I really want to echo that importance coming again from someone who's had this involvement, that investing in somebody, giving them that hope, but also just the practical skills. I mean, A lot of us like to think that that's not, you know, oh, you'll just learn it by yourself. But when you've got a mountain of things against you that you've got to learn, that you've got to get through while also having the struggles of daily life, I really do want to echo that part that I think is so important.
Yeah, I think it's very easy for those of us who have been privileged to have a different lifestyle growing up. We take for granted so much of what we learn by seeing healthy parents and healthy relationships and getting special attention from teachers and getting to be engaged on sports teams and having responsibilities and parents who have expectations of you as you're growing up. People that have voids in those areas, they just haven't learned a lot of those things. And that is through no fault of their own. We learn so much by absorbing what we see around us. And I think it is crucial. I agree. It's crucial, you know, from the minute that someone walks in our doors, they probably think we're a little bit crazy, but that's okay because we tell them you're worth it. You can do this. We're so glad that you chose to be here. You just made the best first decision and we're going to walk beside you every step of the way. And I'm sure when they first come in that it's a little bit overwhelming because they're like, whoa, y'all are pretty extra. But we just keep telling them that, and we keep providing them with opportunities to succeed, and we celebrate every little victory they have until they start to believe in their own worthiness. And I think that we cannot say enough about, just as human beings, how someone can transform, what can happen in someone's life when we undergird someone else's worthiness and help them to recognize it for themselves. I think that is really the keystone of what we do here.
A little earlier, Jenna, you mentioned ACEs. And for our listeners who aren't aware, ACEs are adverse childhood experiences. And those can include anything from witnessing domestic violence in the home or having a household member who has a mental illness or substance abuse disorder, or someone in their household who's incarcerated. And having four or more ACEs has been shown to be related to a 7 times increase in the risk of alcoholism, a 12 times increase in the risk for suicide, a 5.5 increase in being a part of intimate partner violence. These kind of risks are increased by having adverse childhood experiences. And we know that the average for women that are incarcerated in Oklahoma is 5.75. So we can see right there that this is a cycle that just continues and continues. We really appreciate the work that you all are doing in trying to break that cycle.
Yeah, our moms, when they come in, they have an average ACE score of 4.8 right now. And of course, that changes depending on, you know, who's walking through the door. As you said, those can lead to lifelong outcomes that are very difficult in terms of physical health, mental health, involvement in the criminal justice system, carries a huge weight for all of those areas of someone's life. And so what we're doing is really trying to build in recovery capital around them. So that's, you know, in terms of their spiritual life, their physical health, their mental health, making sure they have community that's even outside of Remerge. So of course they have a close community here, but that they have an external community, that they have found healthy external relationships, friendships, people that are going to be a support network, that they have a job where they find purpose in their work. So all of those areas, and those are just a few areas of recovery capital that we are trying to help build in our moms over the 2 years that they're here with us, because we recognize what they're up against with that ACE score. If we don't provide those extra supports and extra areas of recovery capital, once they leave our support network, it would be very easy to kind of fall back down into an old habits and an old lifestyle. So it's really, really important to be building recovery capital in their lives to combat their ACE score.
And for people who are interested in both the scholarly literature and kind of this issue, what Jenna's talking about is also a term called PACES, which is protective compensatory experiences. And it's the counteract to ACEs. It's more of the policy side or our action side. There are a lot of ways that we as a community, and again, these caretakers, can act to kind of as a response building, basically, to possibly allow people to counteract really truly this ACEs. And some of these that have been researched and that we are starting to push for when it comes to policy in Oklahoma, particularly through the work by the Oklahoma Policy Institute. They've got some great information on this if anyone's interested, and some of their examples of things that have been scholarly checked and are effective methods of PACES are a parent and a caregiver giving and expressing unconditional love, spending time with a friend, volunteering, being active in a social group, having a mentor, living in a clean, safe home, having enough food, having opportunities to learn, having a hobby, being active or playing sports, and having routines and fair rules at home. And I give that list to A, kind of highlight what Jenna already said. These are the things that are built into the foundation of how Reemerge is working, and it's how they are moving forward to ensure that these individuals are set up for success and can relearn and counteract some of this trauma that we know that unfortunately so many Oklahomans have. More than 1 in 10 Oklahomans have an ACE score of 3+. And when we look for children, the statistics for a parent or guardian serving time in jail and it correlating to a child with ACEs is 12% in Oklahoma, while the national average is only 8%. As well as with a parent or guardian being divorced or separated, correlating to a child having ACEs is 29%, while the national average is only 25%. So we know that Oklahoma, again, is statistically rating higher for ACEs, and it truly is so important that we have these community programs that can help children and their parents relearn and get this support that they just frankly didn't have before. And another thing that is really important as well when it comes to these generational effects, I think, is the fact that Oklahoma statistically for far too long has over-incarcerated these women. So while we're talking about these people who desperately need the care, I would also like to say that this population is overrepresented. Regardless of reform efforts in the last decade, there has been an increase in more expansive law enforcement efforts, which means stiffer drug sentencing laws and post-conviction barriers to reentry that uniquely affect women. The female incarcerated population stands over 7 times higher today than it did in 1980. And we all know that Oklahoma has highly rated for over-incarcerating women for the past 3 decades. And the burden of that mostly rests on women of color. Black women are incarcerated at about twice the rate of their representation in the state's adult population. And we also see that similarly in Native American women. And the disparity is about 3 times their share of the population. And then the last statistic I want to throw at everyone before we kind of break this down is that over half, 58% of all women in U.S. prisons are mothers, as are 80% of women in jails. And most of those women are incarcerated on nonviolent offenses, and they're also the primary caretakers of their children. Finally, there's an estimated 58,000 people every year that are pregnant when they enter local jails and prisons. So I want us to just for a second be able to contextualize that this is a massive population that needs these diversion programs, that needs the assistance, that needs reform. And that's why this work is so important.
Yes. And I think you just laid out a lot of statistics, which I want to talk more about all of those. But I think, you know, when we're talking about those statistics, what that paints, the picture that paints for me is that we don't have meaner women in Oklahoma. We don't have more violent women. We don't have women who are just more rotten than other places than other states. What we have is a system that does not serve women. In fact, in a recent report by United We, which is out of Kansas City, Oklahoma ranked as the worst state for women in the United States in employment, poverty, healthcare, and childcare. There's a reason why more women are being incarcerated in Oklahoma. A lot of it has to do with rates of mental health, of untreated trauma, of being children. Like you talked about earlier, the number of children in Oklahoma who have high ACE scores. Well, those translate into adults who have high ACE scores. They grow up. And if we don't treat that trauma, our community is the worse for it. And so I think that if we can't tackle some of those systemic issues like trauma, like being 43rd in the country for women in poverty, being 50th in the number of uninsured in the country and uninsured women, we will continue to see women have high criminal justice involvement because they are trying to survive. And when you are in a state of survival, things are not always pretty.
Exactly. I think that there was a lot of numbers, but I think it's so important for us to have to look at all of them together. I think that a lot of Oklahomans, they know that we over-incarcerate women. That is something that I do feel a lot of people know. But until you have to actually look at everything big picture, like you're saying, when you put it side by side by side and look at everything together, that's when the picture becomes much clearer. That's when you can see how much these women truly are disadvantaged, how these women are truly in a different subsection than a lot of people. I myself am a single mother, but I am very, very privileged to have family members who are continuously stepping into that place to help lift me up. But I can attest just myself to a lot of the difficulty of finding childcare, finding healthcare, and a lot of those things. And I personally truly cannot imagine being a person who was treated, to be frank, in a lot of ways like a second-class citizen because they had system involvement or they had an addiction or a mental health illness, which we know is the case in a lot of counties in Oklahoma, especially for some of our more rural counties, who also just aren't set up to even have care options anyways. A lot of our rural counties just frankly lacking resources.
You know, I would say I don't have the number, the rates on hand, but I would venture that 95, if not more, percent of the mothers that we serve have their primary reason for being at Remerge is because they have substance use disorder. But they have substance use disorder and co-occurring mental health needs as well. So when we talk about them being high risk, they're also high need, meaning that they have a high likelihood of reoffending, but also a high need in terms of having substance use and mental health disorders. Most of that has been untreated for their entire life. And, you know, the thing is, if we want to combine the numbers with the hope, if you don't know what you don't know, right? We hear that saying all the time. And if you have grown up in the system that we're talking about with all of those statistics, if you have grown up in poverty and poverty is the only thing that you know, and you see people doing things to survive that may not align with our legal system, but people are just trying to make it. Or, you know, you have been traumatized as a child and had untreated trauma. It's very, very, very common to become involved with substances. And then that leads to addiction, which then leads to desperation because your brain has been chemically altered. It's often not a choice anymore. It is a physical and chemical need for your body. And so you start making bad decisions. And I think if we can try to put ourselves in the shoes of people who have never experienced, and this is not everyone, you know, people come from all walks of life to Remerge, but the majority, that this is a typical story for the majority of our moms. They just haven't had, they have lived in this unfair system and in a state of desperation for most of their lives. And what we're trying to do from the moment they walk in the door, we take those barriers down. We provide them with help with childcare, with transportation, with mental health treatment, with physical health treatment. They go to the dentist and to a well woman exam, and we treat chronic issues like diabetes immediately, first few weeks that they're in the program. We are helping them get their GEDs. We're helping them with job skills. We are helping them learn parenting skills. We are helping them battle their addiction and learn coping skills. We are incentivizing all of their good behavior and showing them, maybe for the first time in their lives, what security can look like, what safety can feel like, what hope is possible, that hope is possible, that they are worthy. Those things may be blooming for the first time in someone's life at an average age of 32 when they get to Remerge. And I just want to underline for people who are listening to this podcast that these are not bad people. These are not hopeless people. They are incredibly courageous women. It takes a lot of guts to walk into our program. It's not an easy program. A lot of our women would say that it's much easier to do time in prison than it is to come to Remerge, because we're asking a lot of them. But it takes guts to change basically everything about your life, to leave what we say as all those old people, places, and things. And that's a lot to turn away from maybe everything you've ever known and everyone and say, I'm going to rebuild my life because I'm worth it and my kids are worth it. And so what we are trying to do, you know, we've been talking about a system that, you know, being stuck in cycles of poverty and addiction, incarceration, and generation after generation, we are trying to provide a new system for them and open their eyes to what could be and what they are worthy of.
Another thing I think when you're talking about this system also, in where we could be lifting these women alongside of programs like Remerge, diversion programs, and even the legislative work that we're doing, is if the state, if legislators finally chose to fund State Question 781, it would take the burden off of programs such as Remerge, because it wouldn't be the one-stop shop for all of these women across the state that we know needs this care. And Mike, I know you've got some statistics about, or some figures, I should say, about what this money might look like that we might be able to get that should have been funded years ago, since it was a voter approved measure in 2016. But investing back in communities, these are the real women that we're hearing about that it would help if we actually finally got that funding that voters approved years upon years ago.
Yeah, since 2016, I think OMS has certified over $100 million that could have been reinvested, or not even could, should have been reinvested in front end services like Remerge, in order to increase public safety and decrease the instances of all the stuff that we've been talking about. So there's money out there that could be helping this issue. It just hasn't been used in the way that was intended by the voters.
And we would love to see that money. You know, for those of you who aren't aware, we talked a little bit about Remerge being a nonprofit, and we're, you know, being a little bit different. So a lot of our diversion programs run through the court system, and all different variations of diversion are needed. So we need DUI court, absolutely. We need veterans court. We need mental health court. We need diversion programs like TEAM. They are all important for hitting different subsections of people who need varying levels of care. So one of the things that our audience might not know is it's really important to make sure that your risk levels, that you're only serving certain risk levels within a certain program. You don't want to be mixing people who may be low risk with high risk participants, because that is bad practice and can lead to levels of influence on low risk people that we don't like to see, and have adverse effects for other in other ways too, which I won't go into because that'll be too boring. I just think it's important to note that there is a wide range of diversion programs, and all of them are necessary and all of them should be funded. Remerge actually operates as an independent nonprofit that has collaboration with the court and with the district attorney. But what that means is that we have to hustle to raise the money to provide for the women that we serve every year. And so we would certainly love to see the state invest in our work. And we believe that we have the experience and the success to back that up.
Right. And the voters approved it. So even if the recidivism rate hadn't been fantastic for your group, even if anything, voters said it, and I think we have an obligation to fulfill what has been voted on. And in fact, originally it passed with about a 65-62% approval rate, and now I think it's up to about 78% approval rate. There might be a tiny percent difference in those, but it's gotten even more popular, I think, because people can recognize the community benefits of investing in Oklahomans, investing in your neighbor, investing in that mother down the street, or, you know, the person that you heard about at your church. it is important. And I really truly think that Oklahomans see the importance behind that. The last thing that I wanted to briefly chat about, we chatted about women being over-incarcerated. And I did just want to kind of pop in here that Oklahoma over-incarcerates girls as well. In Oklahoma, the white youth placement per 100,000 was 53, while it was 281 for Black youth. And nationally, Black youth are four times more likely to be detained or committed in juvenile facilities as their white peers. And this generally affects girls. Again, we see this mimicking the adult system. The number of girls who are incarcerated has decreased significantly slower than the number of boys, and the mean girls now comprise more of the juvenile justice population than before. And a majority of girls continue to be detained for the same low-level offenses that have been the exact focus of reform for the boys. It's an interesting but very, very sad trend that you can see. Most of these offenses are things like technical violations, simple assault, public order offenses, excluding weapons. So you're kind of seeing, without saying it, more nonviolent offenses. And I just think that, again, we don't always want to look at the numbers for that either. It can be really uncomfortable. Most people chatting about juveniles or youths in prison, most people don't want to get into that. It's not a happy feel-good situation. I think it's much harder for a lot of people to kind of pull the morality card or the, oh, you know, they made a mistake, so they must have punishment, which we so see in Oklahoma otherwise. But I would just like to echo again that this system, we're seeing it time and time again. We're seeing it for women. We're also seeing it for girls. And if we want to really talk about that generational effect, Oklahoma ranks so low in all of these categories. That's not going to get better if we're not investing in our future as well as now. Now, yes, getting that 781 funding, but also the future for these girls that are still being over police, that are still having a closer proximity to the system than other people in our state.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's pretty apparent that Oklahoma has a generational problem, and we have to start to solve for those generational problems. And if we can treat it early and avoid people going into the prison system, well, that serves us all. They are not engaging in criminal behavior. We are not having to imprison people. We're not tearing families apart. We have people participating in the labor force. We're all safer because of that. And I think it just, yeah, it makes a lot of sense for us to really look at the numbers, look at children's mental health, and look at children's safety. Because if we continue to experience generational trauma in Oklahoma for our children, we will continue to see generational incarceration.
Right. I was just, before we wrap up, looking over some statistics and some work that we put together last year for an interim study on the impact on families of incarceration. And one of the pieces that was put up by the executive director of New Hope, she said that of the community-based programs in Oklahoma that are offering support to the needs of children of incarcerated individuals, collectively, all current programs, they found, are annually serving an estimated 2% of all youth who could qualify for these services. Wow. And that speaks to that money issue, to the amount of people issue. Just, I think that's really powerful.
Absolutely. That's actually pretty, makes my jaw drop a little bit, 2%. Wow.
Which also gives us a little nod to our interim studies that are coming up. The point of interim studies, to echo it again for people who might be interested or see things like this, is to put those jaw-dropping statistics in front of legislators to ensure that they can't forget it. They can't unsee it. They have to have it right in front of their face, and it hopefully spurs them to reform. But also in a positive way, some legislators just don't know. I mean, we work on this specifically because we have a vested interest, and this is our subsection. So Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform, we work on the legislative side to reduce the impact of mass incarceration. And we try to do that through legislative policy, but we bring everybody together. So this was an interim study that we held, but we brought in Women in Recovery. We brought in New Hope. We brought in the Oklahoma Policy Institute, because together, all of us paint this holistic picture like we're doing in this episode for the legislators to let them know that this is a pressing issue. It's a large issue, and to show them the exact community members that it's affecting. So please, if you do see one for our listeners, if you do see one that's like, oh, I'm kind of interested in that generally. They're long, I will admit, they're long, but they're worth it. We try to break them down and we try to give you the high points if we can on the ones that we do, but it really is so worth it to look at interim studies and see the statistics, see what legislators are hearing, because it's important also when you vote. If you know, okay, my legislator heard these interim studies, did I see policy change after? What did I see? It's important to stay educated and informed.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the work that you do and for making this podcast available to the public. If I were to leave anything with listeners today, it would just be, if you don't know about diversion, we hope that this has inspired you to learn more. Diversion works. We know from the numbers, but also I get to watch the lives that are changed every day. It is a pretty amazing thing to watch someone walk into Remerge and their eyes are kind of dead and they're feeling very little hope and shoulders are hunched over, to watch someone at our graduation stand with her shoulders back and have a community of people cheering for her and her telling her story of the journey of hard work and determination and transformation that has happened in her life. It's a really incredible thing to watch. And if any of you are interested, you are welcome to come to our graduations and learn more. They are open to the public and they're the coolest events that we do all year. Very, very inspiring to watch the courage and transformation of our moms. I want to live in a community where people who need help have received the treatment and encouragement and opportunity that they need to be successful, because we're all better off when our community is our neighbor. I want my neighbor to be healthy and safe and stable and working and taking their kids to school and sharing laughter in their family home and just living the lives that we are all meant to live. That is what I want for my neighbor. I don't want my neighbor to feel hopeless and desperate and caught in addiction and unable to see a way out of the system that they are trapped in. And I think diversion can be a pathway forward for so many of our neighbors. And I hope that our listeners will continue to support diversion. We'll ask our legislators to support diversion. We'll support a district attorney candidate who supports and understands diversion. So those are the things that we would appreciate help from our listeners on, is just continuing to push that diversion and treatment work.
I know this is for Women's Equality Month and I am not a woman, so I'll just keep this very brief and say thank you to Jenna and Remerge as a whole. What you guys do is important, but usually thankless work. So on behalf of me personally and the entire state of Oklahoma, we just want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's a privilege to do this work. So I feel lucky and grateful every day.
And I'm going to echo those thank yous as well. And I think I'm turning into Mike. I've listed a lot of statistics today. I'm pulling your thunder after I said that you're the statistics guy, but I'm going to leave everybody with two more, actually. So whenever we did our interim study last year, we also had a quote that I think is pretty powerful. And it says that 96,000 Oklahoma children under 18 have been impacted by parental incarceration at some point in their youth. And this was from the Kids Count report in 2016. So we know that number is higher. And finally, this comes straight from the Department of Corrections, and it says 75% of women incarcerated by the Oklahoma Department of Corrections have a moderate to high need for substance abuse treatment. And I think I want to leave people with these so that you feel the lasting impact and need for diversion and all of the things that we have been talking about in remembering how many people, how many women, how many mothers this impacts. With that, we hope you watch our other episodes, and we hope to see you back next week.